Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot, a late night episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. We react to everything we just saw in a wild, wacky, super competitive, but ultimately great game two of the finals. The Knicks hold on. They have a 2-0 series lead. Steve and I talk about everything we saw, adjustments we may see, questions heading into the game three, and more. Check it out. We're going to have some fun. Hi, hello, and welcome to a late night edition of the Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I'm your host, Nikias Duncan, joined as always by my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday night. How are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, past my bedtime, but it's fine. I feel like we watched like 4 to 5 different games within one finals game. The Knicks prevailed. Uh-huh. But the end of that game, I feel like we have to start with that. Like a reverse order of operation here, because the end of that game was just wild. The Knicks looks like they had full firm control. De'Aaron Fox entered. The Spurs get right back into it. Mm-hmm. And then we get that shot from Jalen Brunson. And then we have the scenario, Nikias, where the Spurs just need a stop. They just need one stop, Nikias. They need one stop. We've seen different things from them in pick and roll, right? We've seen Wembanyama in drop. We've seen two on the ball pre-rotations. We've seen the Knicks poke at that. We'll get to that. But they just need one stop. Mm-hmm. Especially considering like the Spurs tried to double Jalen Brunson and the Knicks were like, ha-ha, no. And so the Knicks go, if we have it, we can roll it. But the Knicks go high pick and roll for Jalen Brunson. Victor Wembanyama's right there. Let me take this switch. Let me contest. We're all good. We get the stop. They have one timeout left. They don't call the timeout. Wemby's looking to push. Then he's like, Stephon Castle, You get it? No. Eventually, Brunson misses a free throw. They have one last chance. They use that timeout on that rebound. You go to pick and roll, Wemby and Fox. Wemby's got to look for mid-range. Nope, doesn't grab it. And the Knicks go up 2-0. Not just 2-0 in the finals. They won both games in Texas. Guys, how do you absorb this? Because that end was madness, because the Spurs had fought so hard. And when it looked like they were about to finally get to the knock on the door, the ball bounces off the back and they fall short.
It's one point a 14-0 Spurs run in this fourth quarter, Steve. As you mentioned, De'Aaron Fox finding his rhythm. Victor Wembanyama, just a huge second half in particular. But, that is so backbreaking, no pun intended, for the Spurs to get that stop against Jalen Brunson not too long after he just knocked down a clutch midi. And it's Stephon Castle clearly thinking Wemby's just about to bring the ball up the floor and attack. Maybe they flow into an inverted pick and roll of some sort. Maybe they just pitch it and go into two-man game from there. And Wemby's like, well, there's my guard. I'm going to give the ball to you, and then we can kind of flow into something since we're not calling the timeout. And no, turnover, split free throws, miss. It's just incredibly tough. So I'm still absorbing this in real time. But goodness gracious, this New York Knicks team just does not die. They clearly do not lose anymore. This is 13 straight, Steve. We are literally watching a historic playoff run right now from the New York Knicks. And I cannot be any more impressed with what they've been able to put together in this playoff run and within these first two games. Like, as you said up top, it's not easy to win on the road in the finals, period. To get both, and clearly, like, we don't have an Elam ending, but clearly you just have to get to 105. 105-95 in game one, 105-104 in this game two. Clearly that's just the target score for the finals right now. The resolve it takes and the resolve it took for this Knicks group to snatch this game, really, to snatch it, lose it, and then snatch it back in the second half was incredible. So we're going to dig into this game, but what a run this has been for the New York Knicks. I just want to say that as a blanket statement up top. We're tilted. Okay. What did I mean?
I think the biggest thing when you go to that end of game sequence, if you think about it, I think that's something you have to communicate before that last stop. You have to say, if we're getting the board, we're calling timeout ASAP, or hey, we're pushing if we get a stop. Go for it. And it just felt like one of those moments where Mitch may have thought that they were going to push it. The Spurs may have thought, okay, we're going to push it. Because no one signaled. Everyone ran. But Wimby threw that ball. And it's just like, okay, that the miscommunication there. Because you saw the urgency Mitch Johnson has had calling timeouts and the one he had to call once Brunson missed a free throw. So I think that was a game changer. I think the New York Knicks, the thing that they have done this entire playoff run is they have problem solved and they have delivered problems to teams as a series progresses. And I think this was an example of it. Now, this was a wonky example of it because, again, this was two or three different games within a game. And I think when you break it down, the start of this game was San Antonio really coming out with fire. Their defense is still their base. And that's what has kept them in this series that will keep them competing. They were really saying, okay, it's really cool that you are like locking in on Victor Wembanyama rolling and you're going to hit him and you're going to help early. Let's kick it and drive those closeouts. And they did that for about 14 consecutive minutes in that first quarter of the second quarter. And they had the Knicks on their heels to a degree. So that gave them a little bit of an offensive base on top of the Spurs defense, having that high level of activity, having that high level of ball pressure. Like, you still have to fight with them on that end. So they had the terms of engagement where they wanted. You get to that second quarter, what the Spurs found offensively, boy, they sure lost in that second quarter. Because if you look at it, it wasn't a great quarter shooting-wise. The Knicks were able to kind of flip things. And then I think the dangerous part for the if you're watching the Knicks is they found their flow offensively throughout the second and third quarters. They were to they were able to play outside of the play. They were able to kind of figure things out. Karl Anthony Towns, once again, was massive in this game. I think you have to tip your cap to him and his impact, and not just for what it does to the Knicks' ceiling. When he's able to attack centers, when he's able to hold up defensively, when he has that two-way impact, it makes the Knicks a lot better. In this specific series, what do the Spurs do? Because if he's attacking a center and that center is Victor Wembanyama, how do you answer to that? If Luke Kornet is in the game, which, boy, we didn't see him a lot in the second half. Didn't see him a lot in the second half. But if he's now able to win those matchups and win those minutes, what do you do with that? And so I thought just the way that he was able to kind of set the tone, get to his drives, hold up defensively, that was so big. And then Mikal Bridges in the third quarter, the shots that he continued to make because he decided I'm not missing any shots in this third quarter. Landry Shamet, it's a team effort. This wasn't even a Jalen Brunson game. That might be one of the tougher things for the Spurs to absorb. You did your job again against Jalen Brunson. But Karl Anthony Towns, just having that steadiness to him has lifted the Knicks this close to a championship.
It's been beautiful to watch. That second quarter for Karl Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges, for that matter, was so important for the Knicks flipping things, as you mentioned, Steve, in the ways that Kat got going. It wasn't just post-ups. It wasn't just jumpers. Like, it was a mix of things. And the fact that they were able to get him touches in the middle of the floor around the free throw line area, let's get you a touch against a mismatch. You turn, you are one dribble away from the rim if necessary. If they don't help, you have a shot at the rim or you're drawing a foul. If you do help, going back to near the end of the second quarter, where I still do not understand how he got that dart to Mikal Bridges tiptoeing in the right corner through like three people. I have no idea how he was able to get that off. But it just kind of speaks to the collective talent of Karl Anthony Towns and ultimately the force that he's been able to play with. Now, we did have some foul trouble perk up in that third quarter. But the force that he's been able to play with through two games, I will battle with Victor Wembanyama. I'll absorb some of these roles and some of these drives when they come. And on the other end, I don't mind driving against you either. I can get busy on the offensive glass if they do stash someone smaller on me. And as we saw in the second quarter of this game, yeah, I'll just get a random duck in against Stephon Castle if that's what you want to do. And you want to have Victor Wembanyama on Josh Hart. And so he's just been able to dictate terms in a way on both ends of the floor that I don't know if the Spurs fully accounted for. Like, obviously, there is a baseline level of respect that they have for Karl Anthony Towns. And in general, it was going to be important to make him uncomfortable on both ends of the floor. I don't think they anticipated him being able to not only hold up against Wimby on both ends of the floor when they've matched up against each other. He's just outplayed him through the first two games of this series. And this is more like, this is cat praise, not let's slander Wimby. This is, you have to be really freaking good to be able to outplay that tall guy in San Antonio. And Karl Anthony Towns has done it. He has been game defensively. He has been up for the offensively. The Knicks have moved him around the board. when they had Wimby on him, okay, we'll use you as a high post up. Let's remove Wimby out of the paint, and then we can open up things behind him. It's just been such a good series. It's been such a good postseason run for him. I'm excited to talk about this with Steve. This is a really fun game. Really fun game.
Well, yeah. We are here to talk about it. And so I think when you talk about what Cat did, the minutes when he did them were so huge. And I think that's where you have to kind of take into account, okay, if Victor Wembanyama sets the tone for the Spurs and they kind of sub him out early so you can get to the end of quarter run and start of quarter run. If Cat's able to match him in any of those sequences or win those minutes to a degree, that's hard to deal with. And I think you have a battle where the Spurs, again, Wemby's going to move around the board, whether he wants to, whether he switches a matchup, whether he sees something and wants to rotate. Like, it's not purely going to be one-on-one. But the fact that Wemby can kind of win that matchup and say, hey, you kind of have to tilt into something else is interesting and something the Spurs had to figure out, I felt like. I think the Knicks staying the course in that second quarter was so huge. 10 made field goals, 9 assists in that second quarter. Cat really handled things. Brunson only took 3 shots in that second quarter, which I thought was like a really key dynamic for New York to play into the team play and find themselves in a scenario where, okay, if you want to double Jalen Brunson, we're going to put you in a tough spot because, you know, we're just going to cut. We're going to flash. When we make a decision, we're going to find the open man. We're going to play out of the play. We're going to make things happen out of that. The flow they had as far as, okay, maybe you're messing with us in certain ways. It's tough to deal with if we hit it. Like, we saw the Spurs say, hey, if Victor Wembanyama's guarding Cat and they go pick and roll, we're going to have Wemby at the level, 2 on the ball. He'll rotate to the block. We'll pre-rotate behind it, and we'll recover. The Knicks poking at that during several different points of this game, I felt was really important as far as saying, well, we're just going to run this pick and roll on the side, and so that rotation really isn't as automatic. Or we're just going to make sure there's no one at the dunker spot or at the short corner. Everyone's spaced. So whatever closeout you think you had automatically is now longer. Like, those are the type of minor things you see throughout the series that become very important. So I think the Knicks just kind of tapped on those buttons to a degree. And I think for the Spurs, it's like, this is where their growth point is. They have to find something in the half court that is close to an automatic for them. Wemby's versatility is what he brings to the table right now. He doesn't have the, how do I describe this? He's not Barry Bonds, so he doesn't have the home run power every time like we've seen with offensive engines. But because he can do so many different things, if he does one of them well, you're going to pay attention. And we saw that shift in the second half when he was more assertive. Like, the most interesting part of Wemby's first half was the 3 minutes and 59 seconds he played to start the second quarter where he took 1 shot. And I was like, huh, that was probably a moment you could have been more assertive. I understood the first quarter because our defense is going, our guards are flowing, we're doing this, yeah. We're playing outside of pick and roll. I get it. We can add me on later. That was the add me on later. And so it's like, okay, can you guys kind of hit the elbow drop here and finish the Knicks off? Because you got to put the Knicks away. And that's a credit to the Knicks because their defense started to adjust. It's like, okay, if you're just going to play out of our pick and roll, we're going to close out. We're going to stay at home when we need to. We're going to turn defense into offense. And now we're going to play ourselves out of, you know, a mess. So I think it's an interesting battleground for both teams.
Yeah, I guess just to stick on the Stars broadly, I want to circle back to Jalen Brunson because you hit on it a little bit earlier. This wasn't like an S-tier Jalen Brunson game. But this feels kind of similar to the Cleveland series to me in that even with him not shooting well through the first 2 games, it doesn't feel like the Spurs have found consistent comfort in like what they want to do, regardless of if they win the possession or not. It's felt like a little bit of angst in terms of outside of like the high pressure, we want to pick them up and like make them turn a couple times. It's like, okay, do we want to give the switches? If we do, how much help do we want to show? Are we doubling? If so, when are we going to do that? If we do, who are we rotating off of? Or how do you want to pre-rotate from that? And pick and roll, do we want to give them drop? Do we want to give them late switches? Are we going to have Wemby at the level? I guess, I don't want to say they haven't had conviction because that feels a little too strong to me. But it has felt like in moments, Jalen Brunson has still been able to dictate terms to a degree because the Spurs are kind of like cycling through things versus dictating terms to him. At the very least, that's how it's kind of felt to me.
I think there's a difference in this series. The Spurs want to shuffle the deck and throw different things at you. If there's one thing that Jalen Brunson took off the table tonight, it was double teams. Like, don't throw a double at Jalen Brunson in the middle of the floor. He's going to find whoever's open. They're going to cut. Your rotation is going to be different. I think where I'd counter or differ with you in this is, and this is the scary part for San Antonio, you haven't truly arrived at the point where you don't feel comfortable with a certain coverage. Now, has everything you've tried worked? Not exactly. But to a degree, it has. Like, he shot 12 of 31 in game one, 7 of 25 in game two. You've done some positive things. Jalen Brunson, the type of player he is, he will continue to play with confidence and lead the dance. Mm-hmm. But they haven't gotten to, well, this certain player cannot guard Jalen Brunson. But they haven't gotten to the cycle of matchups that way. We can't do this. So I credit the Knicks for making adjustments to kind of like poke at what the Spurs want to do rotationally. But I think you're not going to stop the Spurs from trying to rotate. That's just kind of their base defensively. They're going to play with a level of activity. They're going to play with a level of effort that's going to try and put pressure on you in a different way and take away Brunson's space. So I think that's one of those moments where I'm like, I think I get what you're saying, but I don't think they've arrived there. Like with Cleveland, it got to a point where it's like, okay, how do you feel about anyone guarding Jalen Brunson? I don't think San Antonio's there yet. The problem is San Antonio's down 2-0 without having that element on the table.
No, I think to bounce off of that, I think the closest that the Knicks have gotten to matchup cycling, etc. Like the closest thing is probably like Julian Champagne. Like Jalen Brunson, I think, just has a cadence and a rhythm with like how I want to attack him if I get that switch, which then gets back into how much help do the Spurs want to kind of preload. If Wimby's on the floor, am I stepping to whatever side Jalen Brunson's on with Champagne? But like, I agree with you. Overall, it hasn't been Dylan Harper, you're getting dinged, and Devin Vassell, you're getting dinged, and De'Aaron Fox, you're getting dinged, etc. Like, it was some Carter Bryant in game one. It's been kind of Champagne, but that's kind of been it. So I am curious to see, like, as we shift to game three, like, are they able to maintain that level of even success feels strong? Because I feel like Jalen Brunson is still cycling through some stuff. But can you maintain that level of inefficiency scoring-wise from Jalen Brunson if you're the Spurs? Because if you can, like, you do just have a higher baseline if you're able to sustain that.
That's why they needed to win this game.
Yeah.
That's why New York taking this one was important. They only need two more games to win a championship. This is where the math starts to shift. It starts to change. And they're going back to the Garden. A sea of first people who have watched their team win two on the road. So that's not going to be an easy environment to win. And so this is why I kind of mentioned this game felt like 2 to 3 to 4 games in one. Because now which one do the Knicks have to put on the table in game three, right? Because a Jalen Brunson game could just change all the math. They have a team mindset and a team flow. We've seen through two games, a bunch of people for the Knicks have contributed, right? Landry Shamet was probably someone you thought, hey, he'll have a series this series. Game one, did you say that? Maybe, maybe not. Three threes in this one. Mr. Robinson contributed. Mikal Bridges was huge. OG Anunoby continues to be solid. Josh Hart didn't have the most fun time because of the foul trouble, but for the Spurs, you have to be able to poke at the team play of the Knicks right now. 37 made field goals, Nikias, 29 assists. So this wasn't necessarily one thing that hurt the Spurs. This was a whole team that hurt the Spurs and their defense that hurt the Spurs. And so the Spurs battle right now, what do we have offensively? Like, have they put Jalen Brunson in action, in danger in this series? Has this not been the cleanest show and recovers you've seen from Jalen Brunson? Right? Carl Anthony Towns, he's done his job. We saluted him. His drops are looking really good, right? Okay. So, I mean, outside of the De'Aaron Fox flurry in that fourth quarter, Jalen Brunson has felt excellent defensively for what he has been accused of.
He has to do
on that end. So you're not hitting Brunson. You're not hitting Cat. Wimby is looking to be assertive and aggressive at times. What's your thing offensively? Because you're going to need one thing to be able to have this defense that you bring to the table every night have the same impact you want. The danger is Is that going to change the Knicks' mindset? Mm-hmm. They're 15 to 38 from three. They had stretches where they couldn't score, but they always felt like they could get to what they wanted to. That's the scary part. And this is a team that gets better throughout series traditionally in this run. So my hat is tipped to the New York Knicks based on what they've done so far.
No, I think that's fair. Like, I think, so much good stuff I want to bounce off of what you said there. I love that. I think going to the, I guess we'll go Spurs offense. I'll toss a thought and then toss a question to you. Centered around Victor Wembanyama, because I think he did find a level of comfort in the second half. Was certainly more aggressive, more assertive. Over 20 points in that second half. I feel like the Spurs were able to find some things with moving Victor Wembanyama around. Getting him like those wing area, those elbow area or free throw line area touches. They go to double drag again. One of the possessions I ended up tweeting about late in that fourth quarter. They go double drag with him as the first screener, and Devin Vassell is in the right corner. And that right wing is clear. And what we have been seeing throughout this series, really this playoff run, teams have really been trying to take away the Wemby roles. But through the first two games of this series, it's been, if Wemby is rolling, if someone's at the wing, we're going to hit you. We also going to have somebody low peeling in. We're going to make sure we are just showing a crowd. We are sinking in. We're daring you to make these kickouts, et cetera. Them going double drag with Wemby as your first screener and that wing being empty, it felt like one of the two or three free rolls he's had this entire series. And he ends up getting a lob out of it. And I'm just like, okay, I don't know if you can run that 15 times a game, of course, to, you know, the previous conversations we've had. But it's just like, okay, do you have a better beat on what the Knicks' help is in the half court? Because going back to that first half, they were playing out of their defense, a whole lot of full court pressure, earnest full court pressure at that. Playing out of defense, playing in transition, being able to attack. I also felt like early in that game in the half court, they were able to play off of the help, and this is something that you already mentioned, but be able to play off of the early help that the Knicks were showing. We're going to attack these closeouts, et cetera. Do we feel like the Spurs found, ultimately didn't win this game, but do you feel like they found enough answers in this one to where, like, okay, we have a better idea of how we want to generate things in the half court? We may still not have the one thing that gives us a good look every single time, but like conceptually, we know where this help is coming from and how early it's coming. We now know how to kind of shift how we're spacing these, spacing around Wemby or spacing around De'Aaron Fox when we want to get to some of our pet stuff, when we want to get to the double drag, when we want to get to some of these early flare screens into the pick and rolls they like to flow into as well. Okay, we at least know when and how to get to that now in light of how the Knicks want to help. Do you feel better about the Spurs' offensive process based on what you saw in game two? Or are you still kind of like, I don't know if they have it right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think I feel better about their attempts. They have more things in the pantry to make a meal. The problem is they have to cook one up real quick. I'm talking, hey, everyone's coming in 45 minutes. We got to whip something up type beat just because you're down 2-0, right? So I think like playing outside of the Knicks' help was good, but are your guards truly unlocked? Do you feel good about their ability to get downhill? This was kind of the issue we talked about before the series. The Knicks having the type of defensive personnel with their size and their length, with Bridges, with OG Anunoby, with Josh Hart, to contest and take some of the physicality of the drives from Stephon Castle, from De'Aaron Fox, and Dylan Harper. You look at tonight, Dylan Harper gave him some really good minutes, played a lot more minutes in this one. De'Aaron Fox gave him some really good minutes. Stephon Castle, you have the turnovers, you have the fouls, but can you get all three of them going in the same game on top of what Wemby can bring to the table, on top of what you're asking them to do defensively? So I think they're just kind of in a specific box within this series to where we need to, like, the margin for error for them as this goes on is slimmer and slimmer because they got points in the paint. You got what you wanted from Wemby. You did positive things. You got yourself back into a game like the Knicks took away from you, but you don't have nothing to show for it. And again, like, this is different. Like I said, the conference finals were a sprint. You're facing a team that has won how many games in a row, Nikias?
13.
And they now go home and they only need how many wins to win a championship?
2.
This is where it's like, yeah, we can talk about the beats of the series and the battles are still there, but it's like they now have more buy. Like you get, the Knicks have had buy-in this whole run, right? How strong do you think the buy-in is when you're 2 wins away from a championship? How easy do you think it is to kind of make some of the right reads, the right plays play off each other when you're two wins away from accomplishing everything you set out to do? And I think that's a game plan that you can't really explain because you're kind of facing a team that you know, but it's a different team because they're right there knocking on the door. And so it could be a three-point game. It could be a Brunson game. It could be a Cat game. Like, you have to, from the Spurs, you got to take something off the table. If I'm the New York Knicks, what we have to do is keep doing what we've been doing. We can try and work to find easier looks for Jalen Brunson. Again, this is a team that has problem solved and delivered problems as a series goes on. So if we can have Cat playing at this level, we have Jalen Brunson where we can get him some different looks, clear some wings, get some spacing for him, let him get downhill and get to his spots. OG and Mikal Bridges have filled in their gaps whenever they need to. And we now play stronger defensively. What are you going to do? That's what I would say if I had a Knicks polo on right now. From the Spurs, we have no wiggle room. They can't hit our defense any more than they have. And we got to find a way to get some easy baskets.
Can I ask you a defense quick? We are recording so late, so I just want to make sure I don't forget before we get out of here. But you've mentioned the Spurs defense again. So quick question for you. Talk a little bit about the Jalen Brunson doubles that he saw in particular, and the Knicks pretty much taking those off the table. When it came to the pick and rolls involving Wimby and him kind of hedging and then rotating out of that, how do you feel about that against this Knicks team? Like, do you feel like that is a matter of the Spurs just have to continue to nail it? Or do you feel like the Knicks have found enough counters to where you may not love the Spurs going to that with Wimby?
No, I mean, I like the idea. You're taking Brunson's space away. And then, I mean, it worked a lot in game one as far as being able to nail those pre-rotations because they started with drop to late switch in game one. And then as the game wore on, they went to, we're going to put two on the ball. That two on the ball is fake because we're pre-rotating the Cat's pop or roll, depending on where the screen is at. We're going to recover. Wimby's going to roll to the paint. Whoever's down there, he takes. We're fine. The adjustment I felt like the Knicks made was there's no one in the paint for Wimby to roll to. So what they did was they tried to eliminate Wimbanyama's recovery. And if they eliminate Wimbanyama's recovery, that holds someone to a degree. So if he's who is he recovering to? Who's he getting back to? Because we put two on the ball and there's no one low, and Landry Shamet pulls out. That's a hard closeout for Dylan Harper to go from corner to corner, as opposed to in game one where they had someone kind of stashed at that block at that dunker spot area. Where okay, we can pre-rotate to this wing. Wimby's got our back. We don't have a driving lane. If they get there quick enough, there's no shot. In this game, it felt like they had more of an effort to go, okay, we're going to set this on the wing. Wimby, you don't really have an automatic rotation. And because you don't have an automatic rotation, they're going to try and hold and help you out. It's not that I feel like it doesn't work. It's more I tip the cap to the Knicks for seeing what the Spurs did and saying, well, let's make it harder for you than anything else. And so I think it becomes, which one do you want to do? Because we didn't see as much drop to late switch to peel out to Cat's pops. We saw a little bit more of the activity. And that's because of, and we saw it with Mikal Bridges too. That's the thing. They went to Bridges and Cat and pick and roll, I think, in the fourth. And Wimby did that, and the Spurs were able to kind of play out of it. So it's like, it's not an automatic. There's not a lot of automatics in this series, guys. I think that's something that's the beauty of this one. There's not a lot of this is going to equal this. That's the competitive tension that we've seen in these first two games. There's not a lot of, hey, we can count on this happening. No, we can't. We had about eight sequences that unless you were a fan of either team, you were just sitting there like, oh boy, what's this mean? Who knows what's going to happen? Because again, look at what the game was at before De'Aaron Fox entered the Villa.
Yeah, it was nice to see De'Aaron Fox have some moments there because the game one was not very kind to him. And so for him to find those moments, like that's really the guy, obviously you want everyone to get going if you're the Spurs. But if you can get a consistent, you know, 32, 34 minutes of De'Aaron Fox mixing in drives and pull-ups and playmaking and turbocharging the transition attack, that certainly gives the Spurs a higher baseline. So I'm curious to see what he's going to look like in this one. And bouncing off something that you said a little bit earlier, Steve, with the Spurs, just their general need to find some easy things. Mm-hmm. It probably should have been the transition attack. Because, again, in that first half in particular, the pressure, forcing misses, forcing some turnovers in that first quarter as well. But in the first half overall, being able to play out of that pressure, being able to get downhill. I commend the Knicks for some of the transition efforts that they made. And we saw that pop in the second half of this game as well. Think OG Anunoby gets a block, and then a little bit later, Josh Hart gets a block early in that third quarter in transition. But the Spurs pushing as often as they did in this game, having a transition rate, as I look at it very quickly from Clean the Glass, was in transition for nearly 19% of the time in this game. And just did not score efficiently enough in transition to really make that pay. When you don't have that, when you lose a game by one where you shoot 70% or 71% from the free throw line, the margins kind of matter in this one. I end up tweeting out like the halftime stats from Cleaning the Glass in this one. And it was a very low offensive rebound rate half for both teams. This game ends with the Knicks rebounding 29% of their own misses. It just felt like in the second half, every time the Knicks grabbed their own miss, it was a kick out to a three for somebody. And it's just like, ooh, all of these hurt if you're the San Antonio Spurs. So, like, this obviously sucks because you lost. You have some positives to point to. And it's like Wimby said after game one, oh, we're going to play so much better. I feel like a lot of this was us. They did end up playing a heck of a lot better, and the Knicks snatched that win anyway. Like, that is tough, but it does give you a baseline of we are right there. If we did actually find some stuff in the half court that we can get to, if we can make some darn free throws, we're probably closer to what people may give us credit for, but it is an uphill climb on that point. I mean, to that point, Steve.
I think there's a couple moments that stand out to my brain based on what you said. And it's kind of, I had a moment in that first quarter, right, with how San Antonio was playing. I'm trying to remember like the numbers exactly. There's 2:56 left in the first. Spurs were shooting about 56% from the field. They held the Knicks to 35% from the field, and they were only up five. And I was like, hey, this is something. And then the second quarter happens. The Knicks kind of flip things, take the Spurs out of what they want to do offensively. They would have flipped the Spurs defense against them. And then you get to the third quarter, they start with an 8-2 run. And it's like, hey, they're taking things away from San Antonio right now. This is big. And at the overall end of that third quarter, right, you had the stretch where Cat picked up his fourth foul and the Spurs were able to kind of come back. New York survived that blow. But the Mikal Bridges impact, the shots that he made, the Spurs refound things offensively in that third quarter after the bottoming out to a degree in the second quarter. Bridges did not care. Cat was in foul trouble. Brunson was 1-for-5. The Knicks shot 54% from the field, 57 from three. And so New York just puts themselves in position where they can absorb body blows and they just keep fighting because you haven't solved our entire answers. You know, I think there were so many possessions. I feel like in that third quarter to a degree where the Spurs were battling defensively. I'm talking pressuring the ball, smothering, help, recover, and the Knicks made a tough shot. Those are backbreakers in this type of series, right? Those are game changers. It's like we can always point to runs and sequences, but like the timely baskets where we really didn't have anything going and we found something. Now we're going to go set up our defense. You got to score on us, and we're up. Instead of 5-3, it's 5-7. Huge. Mm-hmm. So now how do you navigate that? A New York team that is playing with this level of belief in who they are on both ends of the floor, right? Like there's a conviction. Even though the Spurs almost took this one back at the end of the game, there's no doubt the Knicks are playing with a high level of faith and belief and knowledge of, okay, we know what we can do on both ends of the floor. And I feel like with each win, they get more empowered, Nikias. Like, I can't shake that feeling.
Yeah.
You get it. Like, was the second half process amazing for the Knicks to you?
It was not amazing, no. But to your point, they just kept finding ways. And I'm glad that you hit on this end of third quarter stretch, because I had it in my notes, literally typed in, Cat in foul trouble and Brunson getting a rest. Curious to see what the offense looks like for the Knicks. In parentheses, 76-72. That was the score at the moment. The Knicks had a 4-point lead. It's Mikal Bridges jumper into another Mikal Bridges jumper. You had a Deuce McBride jumper mixed in there. And then towards the end of the third, it's an inbound to Mikal Bridges, pitch and catch with Mitchell Robinson with an empty side. A lob to Mitchell Robinson. He finishes this one. Game one, he's still trying to get a handle on the pinky and everything like that. Missed the dunk. Got that one to go. And I'm just like, what on earth am I watching right now? Complimentary to your empowerment point, to where we could say, actually, we can't play Cat right now because of the foul trouble. We're going to let Jalen Brunson get this rest because we may just need, similar to game one, you don't have it, but you're putting pressure on them. We may need you for this fourth quarter to take us home type beat. And it's Mikal Bridges plus bench to hold serve for you. And by the time Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns check back in, and I think at the 10-15 mark, if I look at my notes quickly, yes, went from 76-72 to 87-78 Knicks. Plus five in the
Nekias. Mikal Bridges plus bench played so well, Mike Brown ran it back to start the fourth quarter. At the end of the quarter, he said, it's just me, Oos. But I think that speaks to the spirit of the Knicks. They just want to take this from you in every way possible. And I think that's where it's like that turnover is going to loom heavy. That missed shot's going to loom heavy. It was a great run and comeback from the Spurs, but the margin for error in a championship series is small. You can ask every finalist loser, and being down 2-0 with home court advantage, I wish I had enough time to have researched it before. I'm sure I will spend time doing that as soon as we log off for whatever reason, because I don't know, I'm odd, but that's not easy. I have a free throw for you before we get out of here.
What's up?
Funnier sequence. Tony Brothers saying, hey, how did you get all the way down here? Or Scooby making it to the finals?
Oh, my goodness. My face, Steve. Because, like, I'm clipping a bunch of stuff on Twitter and I'm typing in my notes at the same time. So I'm, like, watching with a little bit of delay because I'm doing that. When I finally get to the end of the second quarter and I, like, fast forward on the stream that I'm watching and I see that gosh darn dog, I'm just like, you have got to be kidding me right now. How do they keep doing it?
So you're saying you sat there typing and you said, what the dog doing?
There's no way that's what you hit me with at 12:20 a.m. Eastern time.
Well, the guys, empty your notes, but I'm easy to find, hard to beat.
Oh, dear. Anyway, I was curious to see, in light of what the Spurs were doing in that first half in particular, what their closeout attack numbers look like in this particular game. So per second spectrum right now, give the quick asterisk. They may update it later in the morning. Sometimes that happens. But face 46 closeouts, 1.17 points per trip for the San Antonio Spurs in this one. I'm about to quickly see what it was in game one. It certainly felt better than what we got in game one. But it was very loud, just how they were able to play out of the help. So we'll see if they're able to sustain that. Looking very quickly, Steve, it was indeed better than the game one. 1.05 points per trip in game one. So up to 1.17 in the game two for the San Antonio Spurs. We'll see if they're able to hold serve on that as we shift to game three. Again, the offensive rebounding, that is going to matter in this series. The swings have been loud in the second halves of both of these games. And the three-point shooting off of the offensive rebounding for the New York Knicks, again, loomed pretty large in this one. You have already saluted Mikal Bridges and OG Anunoby, so I'm not going to hang there too long on that front. I did get a good chuckle out of the immediate Hakimich in the first half of this game. I'm just like, this is kind of rude to do. One, it's very rude to do when you know that dude is dealing with like 9 good fingers right now. That's kind of crazy. So like that one kind of got me. I'm trying to think, is there anything else as I quickly scroll the notes here that I wanted to get to? Fun in the first quarter drive from De'Aaron Fox. They go flat space in the end of the first quarter. He gets downhill. Wimby on the pop. Wimby attacks Mitchell Robinson with a closeout, gets downhill. So circles in with that point. So that part was fun. We're going to see what the drives look like in this one. Transition has to be better for the San Antonio Spurs. Overarching thought, though, incredibly impressed with the New York Knicks. And through two games, Steve, since we're contractually obligated to do this as a podcast, Karl Anthony Towns is your finals MVP. He's top of the leaderboard right now through two games. We will see what the New York stretch of games looks like. McCat has to be at the top of the list, in my humble opinion. Final stocks are up.
Wow.
Stonks are up.
Wow, I didn't even get to set you up for that question. You just threw it out there. Cat's your finals MVP right now.
Yes.
I don't know. If the Knicks win, they should give it to Danhausen.
I'm mad at how good of a shot that is. I'm not going to hold you. I'm just actually mad that that was a good shot. Oh, dear. Okay. You know what? The center this and then officially get out of here, Steve. Obviously, there are going to be a lot of things that we're going to be keeping track of and keeping note of heading into game three. If you had to pick one thing, it could be your most important thing, most interesting thing, most under the radar thing. What is the one thing that you think our viewers slash listeners should keep an eye on heading into game three?
Boiling it to one is hard. So I'm going to ignore your question and prompt and just talk. I would probably say the assertiveness from Victor Wembanyama is going to be key because they're down 2-0. You got to swing for the fences. How do the Knicks open things up for Jalen Brunson to make his life a little bit easier? Because if his life becomes easier and they have him as a steady presence, because like even though it didn't necessarily work, he was delivering some early blows where it's like, ooh, if he's hitting some of these jabs early and he still has the finisher in the fourth quarter, that could be interesting. Can the Spurs figure out anything to lessen Karl Anthony Towns' impact? And I think that would be it. What say you?
Okay. I like it. one, quickly a stat. First second spectrum, apparently Wimby was tagged on 12 of his pick and rolls tonight, which I think is just a postseason high for him, which is insane, the commitment that Knicks had on that front. And so actually related to that, Steve, I think the one thing that I would say key in on, I don't think it is the most important thing, but I am curious to see like what the Wimby role battle versus the Knicks help looks like. Because that double drag rep with him as the first grader is just stuck in my brain. It just feels like such a minor but smart adjustment to make sure he can actually roll into space without feeling a body. Which, that's a funny thing that I want to hit on from my notes. Jose Alvarado in the second quarter, I felt like he's not afraid of anyone, to be clear. So this is just me saying this. I was a little concerned because he slid in to bump Wimby on a roll and Wimby did not like it. And there was a little bit of a jostle. I was surprised that there wasn't any kind of whistle just to be like, hey, let's just calm down. Didn't want to tech or anything. So I was like, huh, that is interesting. But that's going to be the one thing that I'm looking for. Can the Spurs open up some roles for Wimby? What are the spacing alignments going to be like if they do go to that double drag or V action or different things involving two or more screeners? What is the order of the screens and how does that impact how the Knicks want to help? That's going to be my granular thing that I think everyone should pay attention to. And with that, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already. Subscribe to the Yahoo Sports main channel if you haven't already. That is where the W content lives. We had an episode go up earlier today, so check that out. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, good night. Enjoy your weekend. I'm hopping back on the College Football 27 beta. We're going to have some fun. And we will catch y'all next week.
Oh, my God. Go to bed, bro. What the dog doing?